Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. Here at Bigger, we're gearing up to the launch of the Continue to Learn brochure for January 2020. The education programme is going to be brilliant once again, so keep an eye out for the brochure included alongside the October edition of Greenkeeper International. Coincidentally, did you know that Bigger members can access video recordings of many of the seminars and workshops that are held at Continue to Learn each year? By logging onto the members area of the website, there's a world of digital resources available to you on all aspects of greenkeeping, course management, and personal development. This week's podcast is a taster of the quality of education and the speakers that you'll see if you attend Continue to Learn. It's a talk given by Professor Mike Richardson of the University of Arkansas, looking at the topic of cultural practices that impact turf compaction and health. Mike discusses mowing and the rolling of greens and the potential costs and benefits of these practices. Throughout this discussion, Mike refers to a number of slides and you can view those through the Bigger website or in our feature on rollers, which is in the August edition of Greenkeeper International. Mike covers the physiological responses to these practices and asks whether rolling is ever a bad idea. His research has focused on cultural practices that impact warm and cool season grasses in the transition zone, and he's also been actively involved in research to develop a wide range of turf grasses for various environments. I hope you enjoy the show.
Okay, well, good morning, and I want to start by just thanking the organizers and the delegates of BIGA for inviting me over here for the first time. So it's my first trip to Harrogate, and I've heard a lot of great things from some of my colleagues in the States, and so it's really a pleasure for me to be here and be participating in the meeting this week. I am from the University of Arkansas. For those of you who maybe don't have a great grasp on the geography of the United States. Arkansas is almost in the geographic center of the United States, so we have a very warm, some would maybe say very hot, continental climate where we can have extreme temperatures on the low end of minus 10 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit and on the high end of 110 degrees Fahrenheit. So it can be a very difficult place to grow grasses. We have both warm and cool season putting greens in Arkansas. It's shifting more towards warm season grasses, mainly Bermuda grass putting greens in Arkansas, but there's still most of the really high-end clubs and the clubs in the northern half of the state are all still creeping bent grass greens, some with a little bit of poa in them. So what I'm going to be talking about today is some work we've been doing over the last decade on mowing and rolling practices, and going to talk as was introduced, not just about the practice of rolling, but potentially the physiological or performance benefits that you might get from rolling, and in some cases that could actually be a detriment. My contact information is on this slide, and I think it'll also be on the last slide. And so if you want to reach out to me at any point after the conference, more than happy to visit with you about any of the content that I present today or any of the other sessions this week. And as we're going along here today, if there's a really hot question that you want to ask in the middle of the presentation, feel free to just get your hand up and I'll be happy to try to answer it. Okay, so putting green management has obviously changed a lot in the last century, but probably one of the things that was either a great advancement or the worst thing that ever happened to putting green management was the development of the stimp meter, where people could start quantifying the speed of the putting greens that they're managing. As managers, as greenkeepers. Again, it's a very useful tool for you to be able to assess where the putting greens are in terms of performance. But unfortunately, your bosses, your managers, your members, your players, they oftentimes would like to take the stimp meter and maybe crack it over your head because the greens are not fast enough to their liking. So it's been both a benefit and also a bane to turf grass managers. So as we started documenting putting green speed and people started pressing either from above or from side to side to your fellow clubs in the area to get faster and faster speeds, one of the first things that was certainly done to attain faster green speeds was a decrease in mowing heights. And so mowing heights have been trending downward for the last several decades. We now have mowing heights that are down at levels that I can't even imagine a bed knife being that thin. Maybe what's the lowest mowing height that somebody in here is mowing? 0.08? Anybody down below 0.08? Everybody's down below 0.08 maybe? So again, the mowing heights that keep going down are sometimes shocking to me, and it's a credit to how well you guys can manage and gals can manage grass at some of those mowing heights. The other practice that's really been used heavily to enhance green speeds is the use of rollers. And certainly rolling putting greens is a practice that's been around for a long time. You can go back and look in some of the historical archives at these giant street rollers that they would take out and roll across the greens to try to increase the smoothness and performance of those greens. And even back into the early 1900s, rollers were being used. But many of those rollers were being put onto soil-based greens. They were very heavy. And as a consequence, you ended up with a lot of compaction problems and usually a loss of turf after very extensive rolling practices. So about 20 years ago now, some new developments from an equipment standpoint started appearing, and those were primarily the use of lightweight rollers. So rollers like the one you see pictured here that have a much lighter footprint. Of course, that was also coincided to a time where the use of sand-based greens became more prevalent. And so the combination of a sandier putting surface or a sandier root zone and a lighter weight roller allowed rollers to be used more extensively as a way to, again, either speed up the putting greens or enhance the smoothness of those greens. So again, there's been a number of changes that have affected the fact that we've got people pushing the limits of both mowing heights as well as the use of rollers to attain, again, faster and faster green speeds. So one of the first studies that we did in this area was a pretty simple question looking at, can we increase the mowing height of the turf with the idea that if we can give that plant a little more health from a leaf area standpoint, but start incorporating rolling, can we produce the same or better green speeds with a combination of those practices? So I'm going to go through a couple of studies today. I'm going to try not to be too data heavy, but there will be some data that we'll have to get through. So let's start off just a little bit about this particular experiment. Again, it was conducted in Fayetteville, Arkansas at our research center. It was conducted on at that time, a six-year-old USGA putting green that was planted to L93 creeping bentgrass. Followed basically typical golf course maintenance practices for our region from the standpoint of top dressing, the use of growth regulators, fertility programs, irrigation, etc. And we had a number of different treatments we're going to look at. Now, this is a little bit of a complicated slide, but I want to walk you through it just so you can kind of see what our treatment structure was. And so the first thing we compared was basically two mowing heights, either 3 millimeters or 4 millimeters. If you prefer that in inches, you can see those numbers down at the bottom, about an eighth of an inch and 5/32 of an inch. So two mowing height treatments, and in this particular case, no rolling. So if you look over there in column 4, that'll tell you the rolling frequency per week. So again, these two treatments did not receive any rolling. So in this case, again, comparing 3 millimeters and 4 millimeters mowing height, and then instead of just mowing, we were also rolling 3 days a week. So every other day, we were rolling the turf, again, 3 millimeters and 4 millimeters. The next pair of treatments, we're getting, again, a comparison of 3 millimeters to 4 millimeters in the mowing height, but in this case, we're rolling 6 days a week. Okay, so same mowing heights, either at no rolling, three rollings a week, or six rollings a week. And then finally, we had two treatments where we were looking at alternating between mowing and rolling. So we would mow one day and roll the next, or we would only mow every other day and then roll every day. So we had a 3 millimeter mowing height only in this treatment with either 3 days of mowing and 3 days of rolling, or 3 days of mowing and 6 days of rolling. Confused yet? So yeah, it's a little complicated, but hopefully it'll be clear as to how we did it. We mowed all these plots with a Toro Greensmaster 1000. The rolling was done with a True Turf greens mower, roller that you can see. Okay, so let's look at some of these treatments. So the first ones I want to focus on here are the 3 millimeter mowing treatments that are either rolled 3 times a week or rolled 6 times a week or not rolled, which is the one on the left. And as you can see here, one of the things that we saw was a slight decline in quality as we went from non-rolled to 3 or 6 rolls per week. Okay, again, not a huge drop in the quality ratings, but enough that was a statistical difference. When we looked at the same 3 millimeter mowing height, where we're either rolling 3 days a week or rolling 6 days a week in an alternating fashion, there really wasn't any difference between those. So we didn't see a significant drop in quality as we went from a 3 to 6 rolls a week. When we look at the 4 millimeter mowing height, we see less of a drop or less of a decline in turf grass quality as we increased our rollings from 3 days a week to 6 days a week. So again, you can see there's still a slight decline in the quality of the turf, but in that particular case, there wasn't a statistical difference. So again, one of the first take-home messages here is that rolling can certainly cause a slight decline in the quality. Again, it wasn't a huge decline, but it does cause some decline in quality by adding rolling into a standard mowing program. And if you raise the mowing height a little bit, up to 4 millimeters, you see less of an effect of that, because again, you feasibly have a healthier turf, more leaf area, and less potential damage. Now, if we look at some other comparisons in this, if you compare 3 millimeters to 4 millimeters, again, a slight increase in quality, not a huge difference, but again, a slight increase in quality by raising the mowing height. If we compare the treatments that received 3 rolls a week, again, as we went from 3 millimeters every day to 3 millimeters every other day to 4 millimeters, again, a slight increase in quality. So again, as we reduce the frequency of mowing and also raise the mowing height, we saw an increase in the quality. And then finally, the 6 rolls a week, you can see a pretty significant increase in going from 3 millimeters every day to 3 millimeters every other day to 4 millimeters. So again, all of those things kind of point to that same general idea that as you raise the mowing height, that's going to make the plant a little bit more resilient of mowing, of rolling practices. So again, there is changes as you, even though they're subtle, as you go from 3 millimeters up to 4 millimeters or increasing the rolling frequency. When we look at ball roll distance, as we go from no rolling at 3 millimeters, which is the far left bar, up to 6 rolls per week, we see about a foot to a foot and a half increase in green speed. And again, not terribly impressive. That's what you would expect to have happen. Same thing at the 4 millimeter mowing height as we increase the rolling frequency from 0 up to 6 times per week, we saw again another significant foot and a half to 2 feet of green speed out of those treatments. And so one of the things that I also want to point out on this slide is that if you compare 6 times per week at 3 millimeters to 6 times per week at 4 millimeters, we basically got the same green speed. So again, raising the mowing height to 4 millimeters and having an intensive rolling practice on those on this particular trial resulted in similar green speed. So again, that's a good piece of information in that we know that we can raise our mowing heights a little bit, however incremental they are, and still be able to attain the same green speeds by implementing a rolling program. So as we looked at this data and this information, one of the things we kind of concluded from that was that we can, again, maintain green speeds by implementing a rolling program compared to the lower heights. We can increase maybe the putting green quality. Does that have an effect on the root production of the plant? We obviously know we're going to get greater leaf area, which hopefully is going to give us better photosynthetic capacity and maybe also give us higher carbohydrate reserves. Now, one of the things we observed in this trial that was kind of interesting, I was driving by it one day when we were having a heavy thunderstorm, and I looked out there and I could see the water puddling on much of the area except for a few plots. Yeah, the non-rolled plots. So this was interesting. We thought, well, is this really influencing infiltration rates on these plots by such intensive rolling? And when you look at the data, it looks like there's maybe a slight effect. If you look at these yellow bars over here, this is no rolling compared to rolling 3 days a week or 6 days a week. It looks like there's a slight decrease in the infiltration rate of water, but again, it was not statistically different in either of the periods that we evaluated that. And again, same thing here. You can see as you go from less rolling to more rolling, or less rolling here to more rolling, looks like it's declining a little bit, but we were never able to separate it statistically. But again, kind of an interesting observation that we could see visually, but we couldn't measure it with the techniques that we had.
Jacobson and Bigger recognize the importance of preparing greenkeepers to take on the role of head greenkeeper or course manager. The Future Turf Managers Initiative has been designed to provide practical tools and guidance to help candidates pursue their career aspirations through a 3-day professional development conference. Working with professional trainers, mentors, Jacobson and Bigger staff, graduates leave FTMI with a clear understanding of what the future holds and a realistic overview of the expectations that come with a management position. Applications for FTMI run from September until October, so if you're interested in taking the next big step in your career, head to the Member Opportunities section of the Bigger website to find out more. Links are in the show notes.
Now, another question that we had in this particular trial, and this was based on the fact that a lot of championship events were starting to increase their rolling intensity to prepare for something like the Open Championship or one of the major events that we might have in the States. And so we ask a question is like, how often can you roll without significant turf decline? So this was a really fun study. Again, also done on creeping bent grass, but basically we were looking at four treatments here. We were gonna roll it either 2 times a day, 4 times a day, 6 times a day, or 8 times a day. And we did this for a period of 6 weeks, 6 days, so you can do the math to figure out how many total rollings that was over a 6-week period, but it was a lot. It was about 50 rolls a week for the highest treatment. And again, we used the same TruTurf roller. For 5 days, there really wasn't a big difference between any of those treatments. So I guess the first take-home message is that, you know, if you're only going to go for 4 or 5 days, you could probably roll it 8 times a day and you'd be fine. But then you start seeing some of these more intensive rollings, especially like the 8 times a week, or 8 times a day, I'm sorry, start to fall out. And you can even see the 4 times a day starting to decline in terms of a turf quality standpoint. So you can kill grass by rolling it, okay? Just keep that in mind. You can kill it if you continue to roll it 8 times per day. Now, when you look at the green speeds, though, one of the things that, again, is pretty interesting is that you can see there's a very nice jump in green speed by these more aggressive rolling practices. One thing we know for sure is that the fastest grass is dead grass. So again, I think, you know, what we learned from this study is that rolling can eventually cause problems if it's done too aggressively. And again, I know there are many golf courses that do double roll, triple roll on a regular basis. May not necessarily be causing them any problems in the short term, but it would be something you definitely want to consider if you were going to do that over a long period of time, that you might eventually start seeing some decline in the turf. Now, in this particular study, we also looked at infiltration rates, and we did see, and we're able to pick up a statistical difference as we went even one time a day, and all the way up here to eight times a day. So we had a significant decrease in infiltration rates as we increased the rolling frequency per day. So most likely what we're seeing there is that that organic mat layer near the surface is probably just getting more and more compressed, and that's really the kind of the choke point of how water is trying to infiltrate into that green. Again, it's a sand-based system. We wouldn't expect it to become compacted, but you could compress and compact that organic layer and potentially affect the infiltration into that green. One of the things that'll be one of my concluding statements, and after we go through some of this other data, is we always have to look at rolling that it can potentially be a stress, okay? And so if you've already got stress from heat or drought or very low mowing heights or traffic of other kinds, foot traffic or equipment traffic, you're adding another stress into that equation. So even though these are very nice lightweight rollers and you wouldn't think that they're causing any problems, they are another form of traffic. So just make sure that you keep that in mind as you start stacking that on top of other stresses that you've already got that plant under. Now, the question was asked earlier, and one of the things that we were interested in further was looking at the effects of other traffics or other stresses that might be on the turf and how that's being influenced by mowing and rolling. So things like foot traffic, especially from golf shoes, high traffic areas around holes where we know we're going to get the highest percentage of the wear on a particular green, and then the effects of mowing and rolling practices on ball marks. And so I had a PhD student at the university, a guy named Joey Young, that did a pretty large study looking at kind of the physiological effects of low mowing heights, rolling practices, and foot traffic on creeping bent grass greens. And so again, the objectives here was we wanted to kind of look at a combination of these stresses on the performance of the putting green, and then also see how those practices were affecting both plant health as well as the severity and recovery of ball marks under those various practices. We had two cultivars of bentgrass in this particular trial, PIN-G2 and SR-1020. These were at the time considered maybe a newer cultivar, PIN-G2, compared to an older cultivar in terms of maybe their stress tolerance and what they could tolerate in terms of mowing heights. We looked at three mowing heights, either 2.5, 3.2, or 4 millimeters. And again, you can see the inch conversions there at the bottom, a tenth of an inch up to 0.156 inches. Then we further split the mowing height treatments to either receive no rollings per week, three rollings per week, or six rollings per week. And then we further split those plots again, and we either applied foot traffic to the plots or had no foot traffic. As we raised the mowing height, it was able to withstand more traffic. Again, pretty expected in terms of the results there. As you get the mowing height up on that, you're going to be able to tolerate a little bit more foot traffic. When we looked at rolling frequency, we also saw a rolling frequency effect on foot traffic. And in this case, as we went from no rolling down to six rollings, we also again saw a significant decline in foot traffic. So back to your question earlier, it is going to be an additional stress. As you lower the mowing height and as you increase the rolling frequency, you're going to see a plant that's not going to be able to tolerate additional stresses like foot traffic. And again, we saw this very consistently over all 3 years of this particular study. When we looked at the effects of these treatments on rooting, this was a little bit different in terms of the results we got. Probably as we would expect, first thing is we see a significant decline in rooting as we go from kind of the late spring to the late summer, which is again pretty common in our areas. We go through the heat of the summer, we start seeing a decline in our rooting potential in creeping bent grass. But in both the June sample as well as the August sample, we saw an enhancement of rooting production as we went from the very low mowing heights up to the high mowing heights. So again, this is something that we expected. It wasn't terribly surprising, but we did see a nice effect due to mowing height on rooting potential. Probably what was more surprising was that even though we saw a decline in some of the other parameters from a rolling standpoint, didn't seem to have any significant effect on the rooting of the turf. So again, we're not taking off more of the leaf area with rolling. So in that particular case, we're still maintaining the same amount of leaf area, whether it's no rolling 3 times a week or 6 times a week. And so rolling in this particular case did not affect the rooting potential. The last bit of data I want to show you from this trial is how these treatments affected ball mark severity and recovery. And so one of the things that I want to certainly do first is talk a little bit about how we did these evaluations. Mainly because it was kind of one of those fun things that sometimes we get to do in research. And so when we went out to do ball mark analysis, the first thing we wanted to know was what the soil moisture was. So we collected soil moisture data, the volumetric water content with a TDR probe, and then we fired golf balls into the green using this pneumatic gun here. So this was controlled by an air compressor that would fire a golf ball at 275 kilopascals into the green to try to simulate a ball mark. Now, just to give you an idea how much fun this was to development, we could actually fire a golf ball about 800 yards with this thing when we cranked it up to like 150 PSI. So it was really kind of cool to shoot golf balls at the student workers down in the fields that were mowing plots, and they had no idea where they were coming from. And you could bury a golf ball about 6 inches into the green if you cranked it up to the full pressure. So it was kind of a fun thing. Did you guys make potato guns when you were kids here in the UK? So yeah, it's basically a potato gun that you don't have to actually put any kind of accelerant in it and light a match to it. So it's a little more controlled by using an air compressor. Now, we also developed a technique to actually look at the severity of the ball mark. When I'm saying severity, I'm talking about the size of the crater. Okay, how big of a ball mark is being made. And so what we did was we developed this technique where we used a solid red golf ball, maybe the kind like you find at do you guys have putt-putt golf courses in the UK, where you have to go around the windmill and through the clown's mouth? So that's the kind of golf ball you'll get at the putt-putt. But we took these solid red golf balls, and then after the ball mark was made, we would place the ball down in the ball mark, and then we would take a digital picture of it from two directions, okay? And so this would be kind of what it would look like. So we've got, you know, our turf here, and we've got this kind of green background, and we've got this red golf ball resting here in this ball mark that we just made. And then we run it, this digital picture, through an image analysis software and basically have it look for just red pixels in that particular image. And so this is kind of what it looks like. So now it's basically picked all the red pixels that are here in the image, and it'll count those, so it gives you a quantitative amount. And then we would take a golf ball that we would sit on the surface and take a picture of that, and then that would tell us if the ball was completely above the surface, how many red pixels should be there. And then from those two pieces of information, we can calculate how much of the ball is actually below the surface. So again, it's a volume measurement. People have developed other techniques like putting sand and then trying to figure out how much sand goes into the cavity, but this was a very simple, easy way to calculate the percentage of the ball that was beneath the surface, so basically to assess the size of the crater that was being made by that particular ball mark. Now, we also used an image analysis technique to look at the recovery of these ball marks. So we weren't interested just in how big the ball mark was, but actually how quickly that ball mark recovered based on some of these other treatments that we were applying. And so in this particular case, we would basically mark the location of the ball mark. We would repair the ball mark as instructed by our organizations like the USGA, a proper way to repair a ball mark. And then we would take pictures of them frequently after the ball mark was made to see how quickly this damaged area in the mark would recover. And basically in this case, we can calculate the area in that image that's damaged. And then in this particular case, there's 821 square millimeters of damaged area. And then here, about 3 or 4 weeks later, you can see very little or no damage. And we're, you know, only one little speck there that still showed up in that particular image. So this is the way we could basically document and monitor the recovery of the ball marks over time. Now, one of the things that's kind of interesting about ball marks, and we didn't really know this until we kind of started looking at this a little more carefully, is that ball marks actually get bigger over time. And I don't know if you've observed that out on your golf course. If a ball mark is made, the turf is injured. If you went out there and marked that and took a picture of it and you came back 2 or 3 days later, you might see that the ball mark has actually gotten bigger. And this is something that we consistently saw in some other trials we were doing. These are different bentgrass cultivars, but again, this is our initial injury area here based on that previous screen. And then oftentimes we see the actual size of that damaged area increase over a several day period before the ball mark actually starts to go into that recovery phase. And there are differences in grasses out there in terms of how quickly they're going to recover. And so one of the things that we were interested in this particular trial is basically trying to identify what's the maximum size of the injury. Okay, how big of an injury area did we get? And then also how quickly it recovered. And we used a parameter that we considered to be days until half of the ball mark had recovered as being a point in time where we were going to compare the different treatments that we had. So days to 50% recovery. Okay, so let's look at a little bit of that data. Now, this first data is comparing the severity or the size of the crater to volumetric water content. Now, I know there's going to be a gasp in this room when I tell you that we have confirmed beyond a reasonable doubt that if you have wetter greens, you'll get bigger ball marks. No one shocked? Come on. Work with me here. But it was pretty clear that obviously if you've got wetter surfaces, more moisture in the green, you'll get bigger ball marks. So again, sometimes scientists, you know, do things that are academic just to do academic things. The more interesting thing though was that when we looked at the size of the injury area on the ball mark and compared that to the depth of the ball mark or the size of the crater, we actually saw that as you had larger ball marks, bigger craters, you actually had less injured area, okay? So if you have a very small dimple, you end up getting a much bigger ball mark. So drier conditions, even though you won't get as big of a ball mark being made on it, you actually can see greater injury areas out of those ball marks. And again, we saw a pretty nice relationship on that. Again, these would be the larger craters over here, and then this would be, it's opposite of that. This is the larger craters going in this direction, and you have smaller injury areas as you start getting larger craters. Okay, so what's the reason for that? Well, it's basically the way I would explain that is that if I put my hand on a pillow and then drop something heavy on it, okay, my hand's probably not going to hurt as bad as if I put my hand down on a hard floor and drop something heavy on it, okay, because in the case of a putting green, basically you have, if you have softer conditions and more moisture in the surface, then the soil actually absorbs some of the shock of a ball impacting that green. Whereas if the surface is very firm, if the soil is very dry, then most of that impact is going to get absorbed by the plants that are up there at the surface. And so that will lead to, again, a larger injury area when you have firmer surfaces. All right, so let's look at how some of our treatments affected ball mark severity. Again, and this is, the size of the crater. And so this is comparing no rollings to 3 rollings to 6 rollings per week. You can see that we got smaller ball marks being made as we increased rolling. So as we increased the amount of rolling, the greens became firmer and we had less ball mark severity in terms of the size of the injury. This was most evident on SR1020, which is an older cultivar compared to PIN-G2. It seemed to not be as responsive from a firmness standpoint to the increase in rolling. When we looked at the size of the injury, again, it was just the opposite of that, just like we just were talking about. So the injury area now, this is the maximum injury area on SR1020 as we go from no rollings up to 6 rollings per week. We got smaller ball marks, but we now got larger injured spots after that ball mark was repaired. So the injury level actually went up, even though we had smaller ball marks being made on the green. And when we looked at the days to 50% recovery, as we increased the mowing height, we actually got faster recover. So that ball mark took 10 days for half of it to recover. We're at the lower mowing height, it took about 14 days or 2 weeks for that ball mark to recover. Same thing with rolling frequency. As we increased the rolling frequency from zero up to six times a week, we saw that the ball marks took longer to recover as we increased the intensity of rolling on those particular greens. Okay, so what are some of the implications of this work for you, the golf course manager? Certainly, we still believe that rolling is a very beneficial practice for obtaining better green speeds, smoother greens, more consistent greens. But the practice of that during less than favorable conditions can potentially cause some problems. Okay, we do know that as we maintain or even increase those cultural practices, especially increasing the rolling practices under very severe environmental conditions, that we can start seeing some declines in the turf, some effects on how that turf responds to things like foot traffic or ball marks, certainly declines under less than favorable conditions. And as I said earlier, one of the things that we definitely learned from this work is that rolling is another form of stress. One of the things that we've been doing since we did that rolling frequency study is that now when someone comes to us and says we want to know the traffic tolerance of bent grass or another grass based on certain treatments, we actually use a speed roller to simulate traffic on that turf. And we can basically roll it five or six times a day or seven or eight times a day until we start seeing a decline in the turf quality due to rolling frequency. So there is an upper limit in terms of how much rolling a cool season green can handle. So it is a stress to the turf. And again, during stressful periods, it's going to be an even bigger stress. Now, one of the things that I know the USGA has been a proponent of in recent years, and we see a lot of this going on again, especially during those critical environmental months when the turf is under other forms of stress, is to implement target rolling, or basically just trying to roll areas of the green within maybe a 25 or 30 foot radius of the cup placement. And so what that does is that if the cup is moving around onto the green, if you're moving the whole location every day, then hopefully that area of the green's only getting rolled maybe once every 2 or 3 days rather than getting rolled every day, rather than rolling the entire green. Okay, I got through just a few minutes early, so it means we've got a few minutes more for questions and answers. I want to acknowledge a bunch of folks that helped fund this work, including the equipment companies that provided the rollers and the mowers, the U.S. Golf Association, and also the O.J. Knorr Research Foundation, who provided some of the funding for this work. So with that, I will be happy to answer questions, and again, just love to hear some of your comments and thoughts on mowing and rolling practices here in the UK.
The Green Room Golf Course Podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments, and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases, and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.